Hey, White Sox fans. It is Southside Sox down on the farm. I somehow am once again your host for the Minor Leagues podcast, Brett Valentini. Darren Black is with me. Darren, I skipped him last week. Darren, I missed you, buddy. It's been 2 weeks.
Yeah, and Kannapolis didn't get a win in that time span. So
stole my joke. Yeah. Yeah, we're thinking along the same lines because, yes, they were probably stuck at two wins the last time.
Yeah, they were probably 2-16, and now they're 2-22.
Woo! And I believe you've broke the news before we went on air that they are winning tonight. And I've already told you, you may not get to not recap another minor league update if you actually you're taking precious time out right now to speak to me instead of writing that very important report. If they win, you may just have to double up. I'm sorry, Super Joe Sofresis. You may have to cede your write-up because Kannapolis needs Darren Black. But, of course, we've seen that they've lost games late. They've lost games early. They've just plain lost games. But rather than start in Kannapolis, Darren, let's, I guess, target the more maybe intriguing, I dare say interesting aspects of the system. I should say that running along with this morning is the first monthly update. It's the May update that Darren's put together. And let me just point out, again, it's only been 2 weeks since we talked for the podcast. And it doesn't quite seem like last year when I didn't get to talk to you at all, but for that weird draft day thing where we kept musing about what weird named guy they were going to draft next because they all had funny names. But last year, not having the minors sucked on a lot of levels, and one of them was not getting to talk to you and not getting to read your stuff. And one of the delightful things that you do for us, and until we saw it coming up again with the weeklies and now even the monthlies, it didn't sort of hit me that it is a lot of fun to be able to read not just the difficult parts of doing it, which is like the nuts and bolts stuff, which is like, you know, this guy went 2-18 this week or whatever, but it's taking a guy, you know, good or bad, and trying to apply what they're doing to project, to say, okay, this guy's pulling the ball. This is good or this is bad for whatever reason. Or this guy, you know, Danny Farquhar is apparently teaching his guys to throw strikes, you know? and you know, that stuff, maybe, you know, I'm a little slow, so maybe the fact that, you know, because I'm slow, this seems like a much bigger deal to me. But it is a real pleasure to be able to get your take on these guys and the interpretation that you put forth, because it does help us all. Maybe people who spend more time paying attention to the White Sox rather than the system, it might not even be interpreting the White Sox performances on that level, to be able to sort of apply some of the stuff you're putting together toward, you know, being able to project and interpret even in this early sample size, because we've already seen some really interesting trends. One of them being, Darren, in Charlotte, Gavin Sheets just hitting the ground running, hitting the hell out of the ball like we speculated he might, because he had that surprising little bit of a power flash in Birmingham in 2019. And you thought, you know what? I wonder how this is going to play. He doesn't get the major league ball. He doesn't get the live ball that we thought he might hit 50 homers on in Charlotte, but he still looks like he's got his offensive game put together.
Yeah. He's the power is right now at a career best. He is in a hitter's park. So you always got to keep that in the back of your mind. And three of his four homers are in Charlotte. But still, he's actually clearing the fence. The home run per fly ball rate is up to a more comfortable, like, mid-teens, which is probably closer to what you want your power guy to have. But yeah, coming into the season, because I mean, the old adage was that he was in the best shape of his life. But obviously, he's doing that because he's moving to the outfield, new position. Right. But all that is not really affecting him so far. He's actually been probably the best he's been in the minors so far. And he has to deal with being in the outfield, a position he's never done or never played in. And he's doing everything really well so far. If Yermín Mercedes didn't have that awesome April, I'm sure we probably would have seen him or maybe Jake Berger up in the, on the south side. But he and a lot of other guys are kind of pushing the envelope in Charlotte to get up here.
Well, here's something that's intriguing, because sort of combining the two stories, which, you know, things, it's not going to happen every month, but it just sort of so happens that the weekly update and the monthly update sort of collide this time around. makes my job a little easier. Maybe in a way it makes yours, but, and of course we're just a month into the season, so maybe it makes everything a little bit easier. But we're coming off of a week where Adam Engel was the MVP and the Man of Steel is pretty much doing it all, as you probably would expect. You would like to think he's got Triple H sorted out by now. He spent a fair amount of time in Charlotte, and he's doing what he needs to do to get back. But what I thought was interesting about your write-up, which published on Monday, is that it's not a no-brainer. He's going to be called right up, and he might even find himself treading in a little water. So talk a little bit about Adam, and then let's also look at the fact that is a guy like Gavin Sheets, is there appeal that he might have in being called up, you know, rather than Adam?
Yeah, sure. So Adam Engel, he's been there for a week. He's actually doing pretty well. I'm pretty sure in his first game, he actually had a game tying homer in the ninth, which is pretty cool for him. You never have to worry about his defense, though I haven't heard anything bad about it during his rehab. But that's something that, you know, you can just plug in and that's what you'll get. But in his first week, his hitter profile, walks, strikeouts are a lot like what he was last season with the White Sox, and that's very promising because that was a huge improvement from 2019 to 2020, was the cut down in strikes, and the walks kind of stayed where they were, but he was just putting the ball in play a lot more often. And the reason why I was saying like maybe he's not a lock is because Danny Mendick has his role, and he can play second, short, and third base, and then they throw him out in the outfield when they feel like it. And then Leury Garcia is the super utility outfielder and infielder. And then you've got Jake Lamb actually, like, doing things. Like, he's actually, after his first two, like, abysmal weeks, like, he's actually been doing pretty well. I think eventually he will come up when he's ready, but maybe he'll be on a bit longer rehab quotation stint. Just to kind of get a feel for it. But yeah, he's doing really well. Gavin Sheets. So I would have thought Luis Gonzalez would be the next guy up, but Blake Rutherford has been doing actually very, very well. And if you're on the 40 man, I'm expecting that you're going to be up this season eventually. So I would say when Adam Mangle's back, he'll probably be up. And then if there's another injury or anything, it'll be Blake Rutherford. If it's another outfielder, if it's Yermin and he goes out or he just keeps slumping after his May slump, I'm not really sure who I'd rather pick, Gavin Sheets or Jake Berger, because both of them are doing really well in different ways. And both of them will probably be a DH because Jake Berger is not doing so hot at third base currently. And then Gavin Sheets is more of still a first base DH profile.
You know, I guess we're sort of into talking about the White Sox, and hey, They're a good team. Charlotte isn't. So let's talk about them for a second. Is there any scenario that you can imagine where Adam Eaton sees his role reduced? He's been banged up. He's not that, you know, I mean, listen, none of us are excited about Adam Eaton, even though he's maybe done a little bit better than we would expect. I guess maybe we've done a little better. He's had a couple key hits or whatever.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that maybe as the season goes on, that maybe his role may diminish, where some of these younger guys, Adam Engel maybe becomes a primary starter, and maybe you get a guy playing some corner outfield where Adam's maybe being, you know, reduced to Adam Engel, Adam Eaton, Jesus Christ, they got to sign every Adam in the book. It, you know, gets maybe pushed to the side and it sees more bench time. Of course, he's not going to be happy about it. And he's going to be getting another Nick Swisher situation, but can you envision that maybe in the second half of the season?
Yeah. So when Adam Engel does come up, I figure he's going to start against lefties always, whether he's in right or in center, because in his career, he's been much better against lefties. Obviously, he's a right-handed hitter, so that's kind of obvious. But he was really good against them last year. I kind of get the feeling that he is a Tony La Russa favorite, not just because like they have the same like scrappiness to them or whatever. But I know that he was in Arizona when he was also in Arizona, and he said that he liked him back when he was a prospect. But I don't see him ever. I think his salary is $7 million. I don't see him losing his everyday spot at playing against righties unless they trade for somebody. Because he's proven it in the past that he's a good hitter. And he's had some timely hits lately, even if he's been struggling. But I can't imagine like Luis Gonzalez, Blake Rutherford, or Gavin Sheets taking time away from him in right field against righties. I just don't think that would happen. And he, I mean, he's not a half bad defensive outfielder too. And you kind of need, like if you put Angle in center, and then Eaton in right, I mean, you still have the liability of Vaughn over there, but it's looking a lot better defensive wise. So I don't think he'll ever leave starting role, but when Angle's up, he'll definitely be getting a lot more at bats. It's just, he's got his role and he does his role thing pretty well. Maybe not the hitting wise right now, but he'll be there for the long haul.
Let's face it, Darren, they, Tony and Eaton probably vote the same. That probably helps. They see each other. They understand each other. They know the plight of their type of person. Okay, let's talk about another guy that you mentioned in the weekly update, and that is Jace Fry, a guy that you think has a much faster path to the majors, both because of bullpen necessity in terms of handedness, but just the fact that he's hit the ground running. It seems like there's not any real rust from having a pretty long layoff and the back issue.
Yeah, I think he also pitched Tuesday as well. I'm not sure how long he went through. I haven't finished that write-up yet, but he threw another scoreless. So that's three appearances, no runs, striking out people. The Sox already don't have a lot of lefties in their pen. It's just Crochet and Bummer. The question was always who was going to be sent down. Before the season, you could have it probably would have been Marshall, and he still hasn't really shown anything yet because he's the, I guess, third lefty option since his changeup used to be pretty good against them, but he hasn't, he just hasn't gotten it today or this year. But yeah, once he's officially ready, I fully expect him to be up and then getting a lot of like high leverage innings because that's always been a spot. He's always had good stuff. He could just never get it right. A lot like Dylan Cease until he finally got it right. So I'm very curious to see how Ethan Katz attacks Jace Fry and all the plethora of pitches he can throw.
It also seems like Jace Fry and Aaron Bummer seem to just they seem to very conveniently alternate effectiveness. Like one guy's good 1 year, and one guy, and Aaron Bummer seems like, I mean, he's up in the air, but so far it has not been a great year for him. So maybe this is just him saying, hey, Chase, I just want to let the White Sox know they really need you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just be not so great, and you come in and save the day. All right, last thing about Charlotte, Darren, let's talk about the Jimmy Lambert start. I guess by any indication, adequate. He's a guy who averaged, I think I figured I did the math somehow. I think I did it right. He's been averaging about 2 1/3 inning per start in Charlotte. He got three innings with the White Sox. Go figure under Tony La Russa. But, you know, an okay start. What did that start say? Just place marker thing, go keep working and try and stretch out with the Knights? Or what indications does it give you?
Yeah, no, I mean, first off, the White Sox starting staff is going to be a lot or an injury for someone to ever take a spot from either of those five guys because of how well all of them are pitching. But Lambert, before the season, they said that they're going to try to ramp him up because he didn't play any, not even alt site because he got hurt last season. So he, besides, I think he got into a game or two in 2020 as the Sox bullpen. But so he really hasn't started a game since September, late August of 2019. So they have to ramp him up to get his arm used to actually throwing. I'm not sure if they want to use him in the bullpen later on because they really haven't had success using their AAA starters in the bullpen so far. Like Stever hasn't really proven it. And then obviously you've got Ronaldo Lopez, an actual starter that can go a bit longer right now in the wings. So if someone does get hurt, I still think it's going to be Lopez to get that option. But I mean, the stuff looked good, especially the first inning. He just has to get his motion repeatable. Just got to get his fastball curveball working and get that third pitch. But he's got a long way to go to see him in the majors pitching regularly. I know people have been talking about Lance Lynn and Rodon, who they're going to keep. And I'm sure in the back of Jerry Reinsdorf's mind is Jimmy Lambert's cheap. Maybe just use him.
It's cute that people are discussing which one they're going to keep. Is there a third option? I think there's a third option here.
Yeah, I think Stever and Lambert might be 4 or 5 next year.
But again, Darren, I say it all. It seems like every podcast I say it, that's a whole nother podcast, and we'll talk about that one day, but not now. We are going to Birmingham now because they are the exciting team in the system. They, at this point, they're practically rivaling the White Sox as the best team in the organization. What's crazy is they started off the season hitting the heck out of the ball, which freaked everybody out because it's like, wait, they had a home week and they knocked the cover off the ball, and they haven't really let up knocking the cover off the ball by and large. But and then maybe about the second week, or maybe right out of the gate, the pitching was awesome. Connor Pilkington is the monthly MVP, and he's been at least one weekly MVP. Blake Battenfield, I don't know if he has been, but he's been generally great, even though he's not a guy we regard in the same way. Cade McClure, this latest week, so I think he's had two weekly MVPs. He's been great. JB, as I like to call him, he's been called up now for Winston-Salem, and he hit the ground running. This is an unbelievable starting staff. This is the staff they need. Can they get all those guys up to Charlotte? Yeah. Because thank God the White Sox rotation's been so good and so dependable, because if something happens, panic. Or maybe they just go right down to Birmingham. Just talk about this rotation, because they have been lights out, Darren.
Yeah, I mean like you said, Pilkington and McClure have been really, really good. McClure's, because he was the weekly winner, he's had one bad start, much like Giolito with that one bad start, and his ERA was all out of whack until he got a lot of starts rolling. But if you take out that one start, McClure actually just has like a 1.80 ERA, so he's been really good, one bad start. Pilkington has been just consistent throughout. Every single start is 5 innings. It's always good. He's always throwing strikes. He's never walking people, which is fantastic. And coming in, 2019 walk rate was very low, but he's actually improved that too. So I don't know what the White Sox were doing with all these guys in 2020 and then in the offseason heading into 2021, but a lot of these guys are just throwing a lot more strikes. And even Alec Hansen is throwing a lot more strikes. But, I mean, it was still a tall task. He still has a lot of walks, but they've even fallen. But yeah, JB is probably the biggest surprise so far, because I figured he was going to be in the bullpen. But again, the same, I don't know what Danny Farquhar is doing in Winston-Salem, but it all seems to be working. And he's striking out a ton of people. He's not walking anybody. He's throwing strikes after strike after strike, and actually going deeper into games than what I figured. So yeah, that rotation is very, very good, especially with Charlotte's rotation not doing as well as we would have liked. But yeah, the next level down is looking really good.
Tall task, Alec Hansen. Yeah. That's real nice. Yeah. Very nice, Darren. That's why we pay him the big bucks. Okay, but let's talk about that bullpen, because here's the thing. You got that the triumvirate that I like, the Cannon, Souza, Perez. You've got this guy who dropped out of the sky, Ofrady Gomez. And it's like you're talking about a really strong bullpen as well. And then it's like, oh, yeah, Alec Hansen, the 8-foot-tall guy, who at times has been, he's been at least a top 3 prospect or a top 5 prospect in the system, right? I mean, he's certainly fallen.
His
fortunes
have
fallen. But he's a guy who, in theory, would have that potential. There's not like a wasted spot. Whatever they're feeding those guys in Birmingham, just in the pitcher's table, I want to eat some of that too. Is that a Meals on Wheels thing that we can get? Because I want some of it too. The bullpen's been really encouraging as well.
Yeah, the bullpen's actually been fantastic, because I regard the best next best crop of lefties in the White Sox rotation or bullpen to be in Birmingham, and Bennett Souza of Andrew Perez have been pretty good. Ofrady Gomez he actually leads Birmingham in strikeouts, even though he's in the bullpen, which is outrageous. Like a 1.15 ERA, 24 Ks in about 16 innings. He has been awesome. I don't know what really is going to happen with this guy, because you need a much more time to see if this is the real deal. And he's a bit older for the AA league. So you need to see him in Charlotte, but he's been an awesome story. If I were to pick the MVP, I would have picked Ofrady Gomez because of just how awesome he is. But Connor Pilkington deserved it as well, because he's also been pretty good. Just a lot of surprises overall in Birmingham, to be honest.
All right, listeners, readers, watchers, Darren Black, calling you out. You voted wrong. Yeah. okay, listen. The bats have been hot. Mike Rodolfo, I cannot figure out. He was horrible to start the season. Then he went bananas. And then he sort of went horrible again. He's one of the rare guys who, like, gone onto the list out of nowhere. Then he's completely fallen off the list. He's been extremely hot and cold. But rather than just talk about Mike, or he might be the guy I want to talk about, there have been a lot of good bats for me. I think they've cooled a little bit. But is there a bat, given that that's such a weird mix of players, is there a guy among the position players who seems to have the most promise to you or is most exciting to you at this point a month into the season?
Yeah, well, I mean, the easy answer is Mike Rodolfo, just because he's actually hitting for power and he's playing in the field again, which is amazing. He's got 6 homers. He's hot and cold, kind of like how Javier Baez is hot and cold, because he just strikes out a lot. So he'll just have those days where he'll strike out 3-4 times. He's showing the power. That's what you want out of the guy that was used to be a top maybe 5-10 prospect because of his power and his arm. I know Dan really likes Rami Gonzalez, so I'll mention him because he's actually a really interesting guy now that he's playing shortstop a lot. He's always been a guy that hit for average, decent speed, but he's doing it much better now because he's walking at his highest rate and it's his highest level, which is always a great sign. If you're walking more at AA than you are at Kannapolis, great sign. He is striking out a bit more, not terribly to his career average, but it still is generally high, just below 30%, which doesn't sound great, but he's walking in double digits too. So I'd kind of cancel those out. He's showing a lot of power in a non-hitter's ballpark. He's still stealing 4 bases, showing some speed. He's playing shortstop now, so he's just been great. Very surprising. He squares out the ball a ton. He does hit a lot of grounders, which is the only bad thing. So maybe he's kind of getting a little bit lucky with BABIP because that is a little high. So maybe keep an eye out on that. But he's been one of the more surprising guys since they took him in the – I don't think he was a high slot guy or that high a slot draft pick. But he's been very surprising. And looking forward to him when he's finally in AAA.
So you say Dan likes this guy?
Daniel Victor.
Dan Victor. Yeah, the guy. Yeah. Yeah. I think he's supposed to be on a podcast. I think he writes for us, I think. Yeah, he's supposed to be on a podcast, yeah. Darren. And one of these days, maybe Dan Victor's going to be on the podcast. Or maybe, you know what, Dan, if you don't want to be on the podcast, maybe just send Venus Victor. Because Venus Victor did outpoll you in a recent poll. Because I think Venus had a little bit of the mojo going to get that rain out for Kannapolis to sort of push another, let's face it, no-brainer loss, pushed it away, right? And I think Venus got more votes for some sort of rain dance that Venus did rather than you dance. So, Dan, we'll take Venus. That's cool. I mean, you know, we had Chico Marx, the very large and in charge cat from Winston-Salem, Chico Marx Brady last week. We can just keep rotating anyway.
Yeah.
I'm giving Dan enough trouble. And he's probably not listening. So, okay. Hey, Dan. This probably would be a good time, as we are now doing the roll call of all pets on the podcast, to take a break, take a real quick break on the pack a podcast. We will be back in just a minute talking about the somewhat less compelling, but we'll find something interesting about the single A teams for the White Sox. Hey, White Sox fans, suppress your laughter. We are back in, we're just talking now about single A, Darren. We'll get to low A. Let's talk a little high A. That's a team that I can't really figure out either. They seem to have forgotten how to hit early in the season.
Maybe, either.
Yeah, first half of the month, it seemed like they were finding ways just to eke out victories, just hit just enough to win. Now it seems like they've lost the ability to do that. What do you make of this collection of guys?
Yeah, I mean, even their record is kind of just, who are we? Because I believe when I checked for the monthly or the weekly, it's been 3 straight Sundays where they finished the week back at 500. So they just keep somehow, however they're doing it, whether they're hitting 1 week and then just pitching another week, they always just get back to 500 by their off day on Monday. With the news that they sent down a couple guys, Luis Maicis and Harvin Mendoza, probably guys that a bit of an aggressive promotion just since they didn't play last season and coming from rookie ball. But they're trying to improve the overall team, I guess, to get rid of the guys that just clearly weren't ready. They're heading into the season, they weren't a real prospect heavy team. It was kind of Caleb Freeman and then a lot of like names that you used to know, like Lenyon Sosa, Bryce Bush, Gilbert Sanchez. But Luis Curbelo has been probably the best of the bunch so far.
Yeah, tell me about the statistic that will indicate how much of the Winston-Salem dash offense Luis Curbelo is responsible for, because I'm guessing it's about 67%. I don't know what the number actually is, but he basically is their entire offense.
Yeah, he leads in RBI. He leads in homers. He's hitting the crap out of the ball. Like, it's pretty amazing. It's not gonna stay like that. So don't get too excited, because some of that is just unsustainable. Like a 354 ISO, that's not gonna. We know he's not Luis Robert in, right. with the dash, so he's not going to keep doing that. But he's been so good.
What do you as an analyst, Darren, do with that? I mean, this is a guy who was on a faster track, and he was a pretty high Lear Gotter prospect. And then he really hit a wall, and he's basically had, I want to say it's been a couple of years where he's sort of just tread water, right? I mean, he was in Great Falls in 2019, or he got demoted to Great Falls, I believe.
Yeah, he got demoted. He was doing pretty bad with Kannapolis and got demoted back down to the rookie league.
So, I mean, what do you do with, you know, I mean, obviously he's a guy, I mean, he could be learning. He could be maybe even, I don't want to call it late bloomer, because he's not an old prospect by any stretch. But what do you do with that when the guy hits that speed bump? Is there a chance that he is now more, he is maybe back in the left-hand lane and he is back on a fast track up the system? Or is most of this just going to be a mirage? And at some point, by the end of the season, we're going to say, boy, what happened to Luis Curbelo?
I don't think it's all a mirage, because if you look at the batted ball profile, like everything he's hitting is in the air and he's pulling the ball and he's not really hitting it the other way, which means that he's hitting the ball really well. Like he's on top of it. He's always had a strikeout problem, though it's actually improved since his Kannapolis numbers. But the batted ball profile looks really good. It's just, he's not old for Winston-Salem, but eventually when he gets up to Double-A, that's going to be huge for him, because the pitching crop is so much better. It's so much more polished. They'll have a lot better breaking balls or changeups. And I don't know if he's only hitting fastballs right now and then striking out on breaking balls. They don't really have that data. But just looking at it, like his profile and strikeout numbers still high. 66% of the balls that he hits, he pulls, which is why he has 7 homers. So, I mean, it looks really good right now. I just want to see him in another level. I'm not sure why they didn't decide to bring him up to Double-A and then Jose Rodriguez up to High A, because that would have made sense to me, unless they just want to keep Rodriguez doing really well in Kannapolis for a little bit. But I don't expect him to be on any top 30 prospect list at the end of the season, but he's deserves a bit more looks to see if he actually is the prospect that he was like 3-4 years ago when he was always in the top 30, because he was a high draft pick back in 2016, but he's lost all that luster since 2017, 2018, whatever year it was. But guy to keep an eye on.
And the White Sox don't want to give Southside Sox the satisfaction of just calling up all of our monthly MVPs. That would be too easy. White Sox, you should probably do that. But I don't blame you. You don't. You got it. I mean, you're paying guys a lot more money than we're getting paid to make these decisions for you. So, okay, go ahead. Don't call these guys up yet. That's fine. But that is Winston-Salem MVP for the month of May, Luis Curbelo. Let's talk about one more guy before we have to move on or move down or move somewhere in the disappearing zone that the Kannapolis Cannonballers are. Let's talk about the weekly MVP, which is Johan Dominguez, a guy who I thought was interesting in your write-up, Darren. You pointed out was passed over for the call-up for Jason B. And just talk a little bit maybe about why that could be.
Yeah, so he's a soft-tossing right-handed. I guess now he's a starter, but when the Sox acquired him, he was a reliever, but now he's starting. I just really think of him more as an org arm. I think he'll always be pretty good wherever he is. But the fact that he's 25 and in Winston-Salem is not great for his promotion ability, if that's a word. But he's a righty, which is not a good thing if you want to move up quickly, because Cody Medeiros is a lefty and he made that switch from starting to reliever. And the reason why he gets a plus, why he's in Charlotte, is because he's a lefty and they need a lefty. So if you're kind of stuck with the righty, soft tossing righty, he'll get a lot of quality starts. He'll get a lot of innings. He'll probably be in Charlotte one day when he's 28, 29, 30. And that's probably where he'll be. Maybe he'll make a spot start or two, but he's just not the profile of what you were looking for a major leaguer in 2021. Maybe in the 70s, but not in this day and age of baseball.
So Dominguez has got a little bit of a Blake Battenfield vibe, perhaps?
Yeah. Both of them, I think, are org arms, and they'll make spot starts. I'm sure once the trade deadline comes around, people will look at these guys' stats and be like, why don't you trade this guy for this guy? Because no one wants these guys. That's why. But yeah, that's basically what that comes down to. They're like, just kind of org arms.
You're like, did Pittsburgh call? Okay, if they didn't call, then nobody wants
them. Yeah.
Sorry, Pittsburgh, but hey, you know, you've earned it. Okay, hold on. Let's move down to Kannapolis. Let's run, not walk. Darren, let's talk about the 2-22, perhaps, as we're speaking, maybe 3-22 Kannapolis Cannonballers. This is remarkable. And, of course, you're already on record, and I'm not going to let you forget it, of predicting a second-half division title for the Kannapolis Cannonballers. And you can have the last laugh, and I invite you to laugh at me when that does happen, because it is plausible. What the heck? These guys could – I mean, they definitely need – 2-22 off of their backs, and they don't get it off their backs for a while. So having it off their backs has got to help. Here's the problem. When you're talking about like weekly MVPs for a team really this bad, it's like, well, who you just pick out of a hat, who in the world can it be? Cabrera Weaver is a guy who is this week's MVP. And I'm sure that's another one where you're like, what kind of choice did the clown voters make on this one? Because he shouldn't be a weekly MVP, but humor me, Darren, and let's talk a little bit about Cabrera.
Yeah, so Sox drafted him in 2018 out of high school. Overslot guy, was really toolsy, and he was kind of drafted in that time where kind of Moncada, Robert, and Eloy were Charlotte MLB in that wave, and they were trying to get their next wave ready in rookie leagues as kind of just to help be the bench depth, I guess. But he just has not really worked out. And it seems like the break in 2020 was not really helpful for him. Again, he didn't really play a lot in professional baseball because he was in the rookie league. So he's always starting in June. But he strikes out a lot, doesn't really walk. But again, he's really toolsy. So he might become a Luis Curbelo and just kind of have it all hit right. But it's just... it'll take a while to kind of see that, because he is hitting homers when he actually hits the ball. He just doesn't really hit it all that often with like a 45% K rate, which is not great. And he also doesn't walk well. So he's got a long way to go in his development. But I mean, he had a better week than most last week.
That's going to be the motto for the first half of Kannapolis. Hey, guy had a better week than most of his teammates. Hey, listen, let's acknowledge something as well. I don't even know if it's pronounced Cabrera. It may be Cabrera, but yeah, I'm pronouncing it that way
all the time.
Yes, I'm pronouncing it that way because his spelling, that is the correct spelling. Kim Contreras, our photographer, down in Arizona, caught that as she's a big Weaver fan. I've spoken a little bit with Cabrera, even though it might be his own manager at Great Falls, just every single game wrote it down in the score in the lineup card wrong each time. And I guess he's just a polite kid. He's like, all right, I'm not going to tell the manager how to spell my name. But it may not be pronounced that way, but I'm going to pronounce it that way just so that more people get it right. Cause I think even on Baseball Reference, it still isn't right. So one day maybe this guy will get prompt. That will be the true mark for Cabrera Weaver somewhat making it as a prospect when people just can get his name right. Darren, let's talk about two guys going in different directions for Kannapolis before we mercifully put the Cannonballers to sleep for this week. And let's start with the bad news, and that is Benjamin Bailey, who's a guy who had probably the most aggressive, or certainly was in the category of aggressive assignments for playing full season ball at age, I think, 19, did sort of end up, I guess you could say, failing, whatever that means, in being sent back, I believe, today to Arizona to just work out in Glendale, and I suppose then just wait around for Arizona ball to start after the draft.
Yeah, he has a lot to work out. I know Daniel Victor went to a game and he said that he just didn't look comfortable or ready whatsoever, which I do not blame him, because his only time playing in professional baseball before this was in the Dominican Summer League, and it's a lot different than full season minor league baseball. He kind of did start to put some things together the last couple weeks, but they were mostly singles.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he was hitting the cover off the ball. He wasn't looking like Jose Rodriguez, just gap power everywhere. He struck out a lot more. Like, he almost doubled his strikeout rate compared to the Dominican Summer League, and the walk rate fell almost threefold, which is not great. It means that you're really struggling and you can't really put anything together. And he was always hitting balls to the opposite field, which means he was usually late. If it was a breaking ball, he's hitting it late. He's not really getting around on any baseball, not really putting any oomph into it. And mostly everything was on the ground too. So it was just too soon for him. He is a top 30 prospect, so he probably should have been ready. But again, the whole 2020 no season, it's just a lot to handle, and he just wasn't able to handle it.
And one thing that came out last week in talking with Julie for this, that she brought up, that I'm sure you're aware of too, Darren, but maybe it's easy to forget, is, especially for these guys, not even just the guys coming from the Dominican, but even the Jared Kellys of the world, guys coming out of high school, going right into a full year of ball is an enormous adjustment. The guys from the Dominican who may only be beginning to grasp the language, that has just got to be freaking them out. This really is a challenge like we're rarely going to see, because you get a group of guys which you think might help, a bigger group of guys getting these aggressive assignments, but it doesn't necessarily make it easier. It's not going to necessarily allow you to grasp the language or the culture any easier. As I think I pointed out last week, Jared Kelly can only treat this like entire team, the entire bus, to like the McDonald's dollar menu so many times. He's got to save some money, for God's sake. He's the only guy making any sort of money. And so these are challenges that, I mean, I think it's sort of easy to overlook. Like, geez, why is the guy just hitting singles? He's like 8 feet tall. Why, you know, what's going on? But I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. And the fact that the team is, I mean, not that it would necessarily be much different for Benjamin Bailey if the team was 22-2, other than the fact he'd probably be hitting home runs. But, you know, that can't be making it any easier as well, because Benjamin Bailey, he wasn't part of that DSL team that lost like 800 games 3 years ago, I think. No, he was part of the team that ran through the DSL and made us all go, hold on, what's going on in this Dominican League? Because this team used to be horrible. Did they just get all new personnel? And they did. And now he's back on a team where it's like, oh, my God, well, this is what those guys were talking about when I came into the Dominican, for God's sake. Darren, Jose Rodriguez, we talked about a guy, you know, if the White Sox were listening to this podcast, White Sox, you know, you listen to the podcast, come on, just go ahead, move the guy up. You know, he's our MVP, Jose Rodriguez. I don't recall, I didn't see any, we'd have to lean on Sean Williams or Kim Contreras or somebody who's really, 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 really paying attention to the minor leagues, maybe like yourself, to know how well he fielded his position in Arizona. He's not fielded it terribly well in Kannapolis. Is that something that's going to hold him back? Is he a guy who's eventually going to slot over to third base? What is his deal fielding wise, and how long will he have to wait, just bat alone, before he decides to change his address to Winston-Salem?
Sure. Yeah. I'm sure he'll stay as a shortstop in Kannapolis. And then when he starts moving up, he'll probably do the normal middle infield shortstop, not really working out thing, move to second or move to third. It also depends on his build as he gets older, because he still is just 20, so he probably still will maybe not grow height-wise, but get a little bit more built as he gets older or just gets into a more of a routine of, I'm a professional baseball player now, and I'm actually pretty good. But he has played third base in the past, but again, the White Sox put people in the outfield whenever they feel like it, so you got to keep that in the back of your head as well.
It's a recurring theme. It's a recurring theme. White Sox, you deserve it. You deserve it for what you've done this year.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's hitting the snot out of the ball, so they have to – they'll probably want to find a place for him eventually. But right now it doesn't really seem like shortstop. But I'm sure they would like to give him probably another year chance, given next year, because he'll – I mean, this is his year 20 season, so he's got a long time in the minors before he's even mentioned as a – maybe he'll be on the White Sox this year. But, yeah, far away from it. Shortstop for now, but probably move to second or third eventually.
As much as I want to relieve our listeners of having to think more about the 2-20 Canapolis Cannonballers, let's just address one more issue, and that is, this is a gold mine of the blue chip arms in the system. This is the so-called, you know, second wave of starters, all sort of battling out there, and it's very, very early. Matthew Thompson seems to, among this sort of trifecta of he and Drew Dahlquist and the dollar menu treater, Jared Kelly. He's a boy, if you ever heard this podcast, he'd be like, what is this guy talking about that I'm supposed to be treating the whole team to? Okay, sorry, Jared. But among those three, it does seem like Matthew Thompson has had the most consistent good starts. He's had at least one bad one, I know. But is there anything to make from like a first month of full season professional ball? I know that'd be reading too much into it, but it's certainly better for him to get the better start than even maybe what Dahlquist is doing, and certainly what Kelly's done.
Yeah, I don't think there's any need to be concerned or worried about any of these guys right now, because it's not exactly like the situation with Benjamin Bailey coming from a different country, learning a new language. But just take Jared Kelly. The last time he pitched was in high school, and now he's in full season professional baseball. Honestly, the DSL might be better than high school baseball, so that's probably a lot more competition than he's used to. But what it comes down to for each of these guys, they just need to throw strikes. They are walking a lot more people than they should be, especially Matthew Thompson, who was kind of known as more of a command guy coming in, but he just hasn't shown that yet. So I wouldn't be concerned about any of these guys. At the end of this month, June, and they still have 5, 6, 7 ERAs, then you probably start getting more concerned, because this is your next group of pitchers. And like the conversation earlier about who you're going to keep, Rodon or Lynn, one of these guys has to kind of be good eventually, because they'll need them.
Remember, listeners, it's going to be Rodon or Lynn. It's definitely going to be one of them. Oh, White Sox.
Speak it into existence.
You guys, White Sox, you guys are so funny. The way you tease us.
They're not going to re-sign Giolito, so the money's got to go somewhere.
This took a tragic turn. All right, let's talk about the dollar menu again. All right. Hey, listen, Darren, I was going to like gush and say, oh, thank you for this great work, and you worked so hard. It's a big, oh, and wait, you're taking time out to do from your update writing today to do this podcast. But hey, you got an easy week. You don't got to do a monthly and a weekly. You just got to do the weekly this week. You got it easy this week, even if you do end up having to take Joe's spot tomorrow, if it turns out Canapolis won, which I'm not aware of whether or not they did, but they probably found some new and exotic, tragic way to lose a game, and they're maybe now 2-23. But we'll find out tomorrow when this publishes. But thank you for the time. Thank you for a particularly busy week, doubling up on the two you did for us. That stuff is really essential reading for, I'm going to guess, not just Southside Sox readers and listeners, but certainly those followers of other sites, wink, wink, who might even make fun of all our polling and our profiling, wink, wink. And who knows, maybe the White Sox, hey, call those guys up. It's all right. You can call them up.
Yeah.
But thank you, Darren. I appreciate it. Superman, appropriate hat for the big man this week. He doubled up for us. And who knows what hat he'll be wearing next week, because hopefully we'll have you on again next week. And maybe we'll get Venus Victor on. That's probably going to be target number one.
Yeah.
Then maybe Dan Victor, maybe Julie Brady. Maybe she's third, because she's rehabbing. She got a bone taken out of her foot or something. So I don't know, maybe she's, I don't know what's going on with that. So maybe she's third in the lineup. You know, we'll see. We'll see. But Venus, if you're listening, bark twice if you want to be on next week with me and Darren, and we'll have a lot of fun. And you can wear a special funny hat as well. Darren will have a new one. Maybe I'll put one on again. And as always, thanks everybody for listening, reading, even sometimes watching. And we'll be back in another week with episode number 6, I believe, of Southside Sox Down on the Farm. Thank you, Darren.